Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome back to Starting Nine. It's your favorite baseball podcast. It's your mom's favorite baseball podcast. It's everybody's favorite baseball podcast.
Get it in ya!
You got me, Jared. You got Dallas, who, by the way, we interrupted Dallas's swim time, which is we're just gonna keep this thing moving because we need to get Dallas Braden back in his pool. God forbid.
Yeah, I'm trying to bronze.
I'm getting Chick-fil-A for dinner tonight too. Let's hurry this up.
That's the voice of the J. Hay kid, Justin Havens.
Woo woo.
Oh man, I've been on quite the baseball tour over the last couple weeks. I have been sweating for fucking 2 weeks, and then we're going back to D.C. Dialed In with Dallas Braden will be there. Barstool Radio will be there. The Evening Yak will be there. So if you're going to the All-Star game, I think we're going to be at the bullpen, which I already checked that place out. I don't know if you know this, but the capacity is around 5,000. So Dallas Braden, this will be
the largest
crowd you've ever performed in front of.
The capacity of the bullpen is 5,000?
Oh, yeah. It used to be 11,000. They took down part of the space, and they built apartments there, like condos or apartments. So now the capacity is about 5,000.
Wow. My God. Is this like a – I'm trying to think of the place that I used to rage when we were in Midland and maybe Texas. Grams? This place called Grams out there in West Texas. Huge nightclub scene, I believe. But it's got like – 7 or 8 dance floors. Like, you could go 80s rock. You could go classic rock.
I've been to a place
rap,
like that. Yeah, yeah.
You could go country, Coyote Ugly Bar, like all in the same fucking joint. Nuts.
Yeah, this is an outdoor bar, by the way. Outdoor
bar. That's
the
only thing that I knew.
Yeah, this part sucks. There's a stage. So there's a – when I went to D.C. for the 4th of July, we went there after the middle game. And there's a stage that there's like a live band. I'm assuming that we're going to be on the stage. And then it almost like reminds me of a carnival. There's just places to get booze lined up around the whole. It's like a rectangle shape. And there's stairs. There's a second level that you can go on. So, yeah.
Us being at a carnival is thoroughly appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You bozo the clown looking motherfucker. Yeah, it's going to be very fun. So come on out. If you're going to D.C. for the All-Star game, we'll be there for our normally scheduled SiriusXM radio programming. And I'm assuming we're going to bang out a podcast on, what, Tuesday?
Yes, you're assuming that because
you told me
I told you about it about 45 minutes ago.
Yeah. So we're going to do a podcast on Tuesday.
I mean, it would be pretty fucking silly if we were all in the same place and we didn't record the podcast, right?
Yeah. I feel like we should do that. That'd be our first.
That's one of my jobs, producing the shit out of that.
We've never
done a podcast. First in-person pod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're on episode 50, and this will be our first in-person podcast together, ever.
Yeah, it speaks volumes for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which
how to work
still,
away.
By the way, Dallas, still holding on to that thing that you said where you were just like, if Barstool happened to relocate to Boston, that you would also come to Boston. You did say that.
I did say that, and I'm not backing down from that.
That
I'm
makes
not
me really
walking
excited.
Away from that. I'm
could
not.
You like? We would put out content just for fucking fun.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Like,
yeah,
like
it would be like so that. Much better.
It would be substantially better. The shit we could do, like we could do like Starting Nine live shows from bars in Boston. And we would be able to do just random content all the time.
All day long. Just 2 to 5 minute clips of randomness on random ball fields at a random bar.
Yeah.
Random tailgate session. Mm-hmm. It would be a constant stream of content.
Well, that was the idea when I wanted to move out to LA, and then it just tore apart my family, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, Ellen cut you out of the fucking will.
Yeah,
real quick.
She was just like 4 hours apart is plenty. Yeah,
God bless her.
Was not happening.
She can't do, you know, the Saugus rocket does not have intercontinental ballistic capability.
No.
He's very local.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, speaking of the Saugus rocket, be on the lookout for the Barstool Sports Home Run Derby, which is dropping a week from Thursday.
A week from Thursday, spoiler alert, Jared won. Yep.
I mean, there are no spoilers. We were very much told, don't talk about it. We can't say who was in the finals. We can't say who won. I don't even think we're allowed to say who, like, participated.
Yeah, I don't think we can say that Big Cat and Hank and all those. We can't say that. I wasn't there, so I don't know. And frankly, I can't be beholden to any of those laws.
Yeah.
So Jared won, put on a great display early, put on an even better display late. Yeah, that's how it went. So
that's your prediction.
That's my prediction.
Okay.
Yeah, because I honestly, we won't make it to an episode 51 if Jared lost this home run derby.
Correct.
I will quit and I won't hang out with Jared.
Okay. More than fair. More than fair. And guess what, Dallas Braden? Guess
Talk
what,
to me.
Pal?
Talk to me.
Got a surprise for you.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Big time.
Don't tease me. I got blue balls.
Guess what?
I fucking already guessed.
We got Jed Lowry on the podcast today. We got Jed Lowry.
About a man named Jed.
Not just Jed Lowry of the Oakland A's, Dallas's Oakland A's. We have Jed Lowry of the 2018 American League All-Star Team.
Get it done, Jethro. That's Good what the fuck Jed. I'm talking about, Carrabas. Good That's what Jed. I'm talking about. Rightfully so. Should have been there the first time around.
I mean, you know what? He should have been there in 2013. He should have been there last year. He's there this year, and maybe he'll be on the Red Sox at some point this year.
Dude's a guy. Guy's an absolute dude.
Mm-hmm. You had Ken Giles, who hasn't, I mean, I don't want to call him overhyped, but he's fallen short of expectations with the Astros overall. This season has not been the closer that they've needed him to be. And then on top of it, he was an asshole. He was a complete asshole. And I don't know that this was ever confirmed, but so AJ Hinch comes into the game to remove Ken Giles. And what did he tell him, the fuck off or something like that? But if you look at the video, Giles is not looking at Hinch when he says it, but there's no way he's talking to anyone else but AJ Hinch. He's like, oh, fuck off, man, or something like that.
Yeah, well, it could be interpreted a couple different ways, right? If you're just, it could be like, he could just be saying, like, fuck off at the situation, like, fuck off, man, are you fucking serious? This is where I'm at again right now, and that could be aimed at himself.
No, I'm looking at the video right now. So he's looking away, and then when Hinch points to the bullpen, he says, fuck you, man. I don't know if he, like, there's no way that he's talking to himself, or maybe I just,
I got to pull the video up. I haven't seen this video. Yeah.
Let me, do you have your laptop up right now?
I do have my laptop up.
All right. I'm going to DM it to you on Twitter. So you can, let's get Dallas's live reaction to Ken Giles saying, fuck you, man. Here you go. There's the video. Just sent it to you.
All right. I'll get on the Twitter.
Have you
box.
Seen the video, Jay Hay? Yeah.
Yes.
What was your takeaway? Did you think that he was actually talking to Hinch, or was he talking to himself or somebody else?
It is tough to look at these series of events and not think he was talking to Hinch.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that was certainty, but I mean that would be where I'd put my money. Listen, he said after the game, Hinch said he'd have to ask Giles whether it was directed at him.
Yeah. See, and so all right, I'm watching the video, and he starts the "aw fuck you, man" right before Hinch points to the bullpen. So he has started.
But
the
manager doesn't come out unless he's going to grab him.
Well, no, obviously.
The pitching coach will come out. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, so like that's why I have to step back and I have to think that it might have been just a fuck you, man, at the situation. Mm-hmm. Right. Because there is no like,
he's obviously pissed off, but he doesn't say it until he sees Hinch. Like he's looking away. And the second that he sees Hinch, he knows that he's out of the game and he says, fuck you, man.
Yeah. But I mean, my whole thing is because I've said, like, put it like this. I have said this to my manager at a time when he came out to pull me out. He came out. I remember having a conversation with Bob Guerin in Texas, and the conversation before the inning going out, like for the eighth inning or ninth inning, it might have been eighth inning, I think it was. And he's telling me, "Hey, you know, we're probably going to go hitter to hitter here, blah blah blah." And I said to him, "No, we're not. I got this." That was my comment walking out of the dugout. And then I come back into the dugout, and he's walking over to meet me, and I just say to him, "You got to be fucking kidding me." And I didn't mean like you specifically have got to be kidding me. I meant the situation. You've got to be kidding me that my manager is walking over to me right now and is going to be saying anything to me other than the ninth is yours. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at him saying, "No, this game is mine," before he even said a word to me after I had just vocally said, "Oh, you got to be fucking kidding me." And so I wasn't talking to my manager.
I get it.
I was just talking out loud, like, what the fuck? So, Giles, I don't want to believe that he's...
You're giving him the benefit of...
Dude!
You're giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I just pulled this video up again. I am now 100% convinced he's talking to AJ Hinch, because he's... That to me, is not a... "Oh, fuck, man, I'm frustrated." It is a little baby face, whiny bit. Like, look at his, just look at his actual face.
I'm looking at his face, and you know what, Jay? Like, I think that there's a moment of eye contact, like a slight glance at Hinch, and then he starts to say it, but I just do, because, like, this is the kind of shit, like, yo, we're going to be talking about this before that phone rings down in AAA, wherever the fuck that is, and you bring your ass back up here. We're going to have that conversation in the office before you even strap it on to walk out and play catch for the first time back in the big leagues.
He is being such a little bitch in this video.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we haven't even mentioned the biggest detail of all. He got fucking sent down immediately.
Yeah, sent down.
So
sent down.
Well, whether or not you believe he was talking to himself or not, one would believe that the Astros believe he was talking to AJ Hinch. The Astros too good to put up with this type of shit. I mean, if he got sent down immediately, either he admitted it and copped to it, or everyone in the clubhouse was like, saw the video, was like, "No, fuck that." Like, he was talking to our manager like that.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. The numbers, as you talked about, do not support him staying.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
36 hits in 30 and two-thirds innings. He's got a 5 ERA. He's got one save over the last 9 appearances, or like since June 17th, I think, something like that. And opponents are hitting almost 300 against your stopper. That can't fucking happen.
No.
All right? That cannot happen. So there's a guy, I don't know, Brad Hand. I don't know. Maybe they're looking at guys like, yo, we're just, not only can we not trust this guy right now, but he's a little too volatile mentally. He needs to iron some shit out before he can come back up here and be the nail in the coffin for the best team in the West right now, and one of the best teams in baseball right now. We're not in the business of giving guys that aren't mentally capable an opportunity to ride the coattails of the Houston Astros. So, Giles, you can be a part of this, or you can sit in AAA and bitch, piss, and moan all the way till an early season end in August, bud. Or you can go down there and iron out, get some shit together, and come back up here and be that fucking animal they expect you to be. They want you to be. They need you to be.
He is walking off that mound like a guy who showed up 1 minute late for like a restaurant's breakfast when they've switched over to lunch and has been told unequivocally, "You may not get breakfast."
Yeah.
"Sorry, sir, we don't serve breakfast anymore. It's 11:01.
Fuck off, you, man.
He is very upset.
That's what's going on here.
So you mentioned Hand as a possible possibility. I think they've been linked to Zach Britton for 2 fucking years now. So I feel like they could enter the Britton sweepstakes.
I think that's where I'd go. I think I'd aim lower than Hand because I think their bullpen is really, really strong with or without
Giles. Their
bullpen
is strong. Yeah, exactly.
Because they never need to use the fucking thing.
Take a chance on getting Zach Britton right. Get him in your, you know, give him some of that magic Astros pixie dust.
Ooh.
Trevor Bauer likes to talk about, and then
by the way, your boy Trevor Bauer. Shout out to him. I think
we'll get to that in the Homer minute.
Okay. I mean, but I still I'll listen to your take later. But my take, It's a little odd to be complaining about all the strikeouts that are going on in Houston for Trevor Bauer, and then he's out here breaking franchise strikeout records.
It's not odd.
I mean, just
Trevor Bauer. Look, the only conversation that's been had is about. Well, no, it's about how they're going about it, right? Trevor Bauer has sort of not pointed the finger. He's insinuated that there might be some other things at play as opposed to just progression and evolution.
Some organizations do it the right way and others do it the way they'd like to do it. And the Cleveland Indians obviously are the classiest organization in Major League Baseball.
Well, that's exactly where I was going, right on the back of that. And then you got Trevor Bauer, who, for all intent and purposes, has told the world, yeah, I'm a fucking geek. I'm an absolute baseball science nerd. I want to look at baseballs, watch how they move and spin, and learn how to do that for myself. And so he talked a lot about Adam Ottavino and his slider, wanting to develop that, wanting to, throwing more pitch design sessions than bullpens, yada, yada, yada. So I know what you're getting at, Jared, but Trevor Bauer is quietly starting to inject himself into the front running of the Cy Young.
We will not be disparaging Trevor Bauer anymore.
Oh, I'm not disparaging. I'm not disparaging. I'm a big Trevor Bauer guy. One of my favorite Barstool blogs ever that I've ever written is a Trevor Bauer blog. It's
is that when he told Avisail Garcia to go fucking sit down after he punched him out? That was awesome.
That was one of my favorites, but my favorite is somebody called the cops on him for flying his drone in a park, and then people were tweeting at him, and I was breaking down his responses to the people that were tweeting at him. It's a very good – I'll send it to you. It's a great blog.
It's good reading.
Tommy John, we got to talk about it. With the summer weather heating things up.
I've got swamp ass, Jared.
Dude, preach. Preach. I basically completed in a home run derby and hit bombs. I mean, let me tell you, you're going to see this video, and you're going to see some of these home runs that these other guys are hitting. If you were to substitute the plastic bat with the wiffle ball, they would be fly ball outs in most major league stadiums. My home runs would have gone completely out of stadiums. So I've been sweating all day, exerting all types of energy.
I can't wait.
How are your old cotton boxers holding up? Tommy John, I'll answer you. Not well. Not well. I'm sweating profusely. A little soggy and damp. Our friends at Tommy John call that swamp butt, and they're on a mission to eliminate it once and for all. Like they did with wedgies, too. They also did that. But you can outsmart heat with new men's and women's cool cotton underwear from Tommy John, the revolutionary clothing brand that's been saving people from sticky situations for the last 10 years, including us. Cool cotton fabric dries 4 to 5 times faster and keeps you 2 to 3 times cooler than normal cotton. And just like all Tommy John underwear, cool cotton never rides up. Tommy John combines the latest in fabric technology with patent designs for a fit so perfect, it's almost like wearing nothing at all, which is what Dallas does. That's true. What was that?
I was just going to say, going back to the cotton underwear thing,
yeah.
I have one pair that I like to refer to as my open air underwear.
Yeah.
Because they've become so, I mean, holy, basically.
Yeah. So religious underwear?
Yeah. It's a religious experience. And you'll never have to worry about swamp butt because Tommy John's moisture wicking fabrics pull perspiration right off your body. Plus, all Tommy John underwear is backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. So you've got nothing to lose. Stick it to sweaty season with cool cotton from Tommy John. No ifs, ands, or swamp butts. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/starting for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/starting for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/starting. So we've got some headlines that we want to get into, and I'm going to bump one right up to the top.
Yeah. Rapid fire headlines, by the way.
Rapid fire. All right, we'll bump. This one's listed at number 3. I'm going to bump it to
the
top.
Go ahead, baby.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr., get this guy to the motherfucking big leagues. He will be promoted to AAA. I cannot wait. And you have the reason why there's such a logjam. Obviously, the Toronto Blue Jays apparently have no rush to get him to the big league level. I get it. Whatever. I picked him.
There's no logjam. There's nobody in his way. There's nobody in Vlad Jr.'s way. When you are Vlad Jr.
Yeah.
and that roster looks like the way it does in Toronto,
well,
there's
JD's coming back soon.
That's fine. That's fine. That is all fine and dandy. JD's got lower leg issues. JD's got shoulder issues. I'm telling you right now, there is nobody in the way of Vlad Jr. This is strictly a financial decision, and it'll happen in September is when he'll get the cup of coffee. And I believe we see Vlad Jr. next year in the big leagues.
That injury took the pressure off the Blue Jays a little bit, didn't it?
You know it did. You know it did, Jay. He's got a bad wheel. He's got to let that knee rest. They've already cited the need to try to bring him along more defensively so he's not just a blight on the diamond, as I think they put it. Well, that's not what you're going to get. You do want him to be serviceable wherever you're going to find a home for him. So you pair that with the injury. Now Toronto has exactly what they need in terms of a defense to give to the fan base when they come calling for Vlad Jr. in 2 weeks after the break. Fuck it, we're out of it. Why can't we see him now? Why do we have to wait until September? Well, guys, there's some financial things that go into that, all right? So just hold tight, and we'll give you your Vlad come September. And realistically, there's a very solid chance he breaks camp next year. So I'm excited about him just continuing to progress. I really want him. I mean, fuck, man. I wouldn't have a problem if he didn't show up to AAA for a while and they continued to rest and bring him along just because he's such a this dude is going to leave AA during hitting north of 400.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just wrap your head around that.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's the kind of talent this guy is. North of 400. And it's not like it was over the course of 75 ABs or 100 ABs.
No.
Right? That's a body of work, bud.
Yeah. I just wish that the Blue Jays were in a situation where, not that they would rush him, but I just want to see him now. And it's almost like a Soto thing. You're not rushing him. It's if he can come up and he can hang, then he can come up and he can hang. And there's no reason why the Toronto Blue Jays are like, oh, well, I mean, I understand you want the service time thing is obviously a big factor here. But do you think if he got called up right now that he could hang after what you saw from him Fisher Cats.
Fisher Cats, yeah. He would be tested. There's one thing that you always see exposed early from these young guys, and that's their ability to adapt to the off-speed at the big league level, because the difference between AAA or AA and the big leagues is the difference between command and control. Mm-hmm. And I've laid this out before on this podcast, and guys in AAA are in AAA for two reasons. One, they're filling space, or two, they're trying to figure out how to take that next step between controlling the baseball and commanding the baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Guys in the big leagues command 2-0 breaking balls. Guys in the big leagues command 0-2 fastballs. So when you find yourself in those types of counts as an aggressive hitter like Vlad is, now they start to expose your aggression in hitters' counts, and they start to expose your inability to protect when you are behind in a count. And that is very real. So while I think the talent and the bat will absolutely play and play high, I think there will be a little bit of adjustment period that every young guy experiences. But I think, dude, he's great. Mm-hmm. He is a great young player already. So I think he would step in and be more than serviceable from the get-go.
I agree. Get them up. Speaking of making their way up, the Phillies, the Fightin' Phils, Reese Hoskins,
Kaplers,
starting nine alumni. Wow. Alone in first place. So we talked about this earlier on your show, Dallas, and I think that we're kind of all on the same page here. Actually, I don't think we got Jay Hayes' take on this, so we'll mix it all in just here for the podcast. I like what I see from the Phillies, most specifically from Nola. I think, and I was talking to Smitty about this the other day, because I think Phillies fans can't believe what they're seeing right now, almost, because I guess the way that the season started, too, you know, that there was a dumpster fire start to their season. But I would not want to run into the Phillies in a short series. The way that their like rotation lines up in a best of five, that does not bode well for whoever they're up against. I don't care what team you're talking about on the other side. I would not want to run into the Phillies in a short series with the power pitching that they have.
Arrieta, Eflin.
Pavetta, Velasquez.
Pavetta's been a little shaky, right? Yeah. He's been a little shaky as of late. Velasquez is down with the fucking elbow.
He's back tonight. No.
He's back tonight, starting tonight?
Yes.
Okay, well, I didn't mean down DL. He's fucking wearing one, what I meant. So, yeah, see how he bounces back. I'm sure he'll be fine. That bullpen? Bullpen, not bad.
Not bad.
Bullpen. Not bad. Old fucking Sir Anthony.
That's who I was going to bring up.
Knighted. Yeah, we got to get a t-shirt for old Sir Anthony, you know, like maybe in night gear or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I like that.
That's really all I've got after that. Yeah. But yeah, he's been sexual. Lighter has been good as well. Arano's been good as well. How about fucking Nicky Dubs? Huh? Nick Williams? Reiki?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Franco? Raking? Hoskins? Raking? All these guys, over the last 2 weeks, all of these guys, well, fuck, Williams and Franco both are sporting OPSs north of 1,000. I like it.
So
I like where the Phillies are.
Back to the main question, though. Do you like the Phillies to hang on?
Nope, don't.
We don't. I think, you know, the Atlanta Braves, love what I've seen from the Braves this year. Love it.
Yeah.
I still think that they're going to get in somehow, some way.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I still think they're going to get in somehow, some way. But you look at the inexperience, you look at the youth, and sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's a bad thing. And I think for the Washington Nationals, that their veteran presence and their experience in getting to the postseason on an annual basis and the horses that they have on that team that are built for the grind of 162 plus October, I think that that's going to show itself as a major advantage in the second half of the season. And I think that that's going to be a disadvantage for the Phillies and the Braves in the second half. Jay Hay, how do you think the NL East shapes up? Do you think that either the Phillies or the Braves can hang on to sort of keep the Nationals at bay?
Well, let me toot my own horn here for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall back to the season preview pod, I was very high on both the Braves and the Phillies relative to most projections.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I did not see a lot of this coming for the Phillies specifically, perhaps outside of, you know, some of their premier talent like Nola. I am increasingly confident with each day that the Nationals are not the team that I thought they were going to be. I don't think this is a Cubs 2017, we're going to kind of turn it on in the second half and blow by the Brewers sort of scenario. I don't think this team is capable of that. I think there are too many kind of offensive zeros on that team on too many nights. And I just don't, like, what are you going to get from Steven Strasburg in the second half? That's obviously a huge wild card for them. He changes the complexion of that rotation in a big way because Tanner Roark has completely fallen apart. And it's weird, right? Because the first month and a half of the season, the narrative was, it looks like we're going to get one of those good Tanner Roark seasons, right? Where for whatever reason, his 7.5 Ks per nine play up, he throws like a 3.4 ERA on the board. And he's been like, even against bad and terrible teams like the Marlins, he's been unplayable.
The Marlins are hot right now.
Okay.
The Marlins are hot. They are.
We're not going to.
Hold on.
I don't want to waste time on the Marlins.
For the three Marlins fans that listen to this podcast, the Marlins have been hot for like the last 2 weeks. They're on a torrid pace.
All right. You know what? The Marlins are not the worst team in the league like we probably assumed that they were. They have a 4.04 winning percentage.
Yeah.
And there are lots of worse teams. Good job.
Jeter was right.
Yeah, he sure was. Jeter was right. If anything, them playing well fucking suggests that maybe they shouldn't have blown up the fucking team, right?
Also agree with that statement.
Anyway,
yeah.
Back to real fucking baseball teams. Fangraphs has the odds right now to make the playoffs to win the division for the Nationals at 44%, the Phillies at 35%, and the Braves at 21%, which feels right to me. That feels about right.
Yeah, well, Yeah, because look, I understand you're talking about the zeros in the lineup, Jay Hay, but a third of their lineup has been absent.
Yeah.
And I say a third, meaning two out of three, because Bryce Harper's been in the lineup,
yeah,
but has functionally been absent. But they were without Eaton,
yeah,
for a long time. They were without Daniel Murphy for a long time.
I think Daniel Murphy is in the middle of what's going to be a lost season.
You think so?
I absolutely do.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Because he
doesn't look good to me either. Like, physically, especially.
That's fine. Yeah, no, I understand, but what's he got? Like 90 ABs?
No, your point that they have done it without him to this point is totally valid. All I'm saying is that I don't think we're going to get vintage Daniel Murphy in the second half.
He's hitting .250 with a 617 OPS in 86 plate appearances.
Yeah, I mean, not outstanding. Not great,
only
but again,
seven strikeouts. Like,
right, only seven strikeouts. But we could go to Bryce Harper's numbers.
No,
when you talk about
it.
Guys that aren't performing. Like, those are two guys. That's why I said avoid a third of their lineup. A third of their expected lineup has been absent / not performing.
Mm-hmm.
So if for any reason you get a third of your lineup back and they perform anywhere near expectations, I think the Washington Nationals don't, as you said, blow by, but start to perform at a sustainable pace that sees them catch up and ultimately surpass the competition.
Yeah. But you're expecting them to meet in the middle somewhere like that. I think that's basically what we're trying to say here.
Yeah.
Is that they've never fallen too far out of it. And they're in a position to where if you get guys going like a Bryce Harper, like a Daniel Murphy, like a Tanner Roark, by the way, Nationals, stop with the fucking facial. It's because Tanner Roark shaved the whole fucking the mustache. Yeah. It hasn't worked. Bryce Harper shaved the beard. Hasn't worked. Stop. Just stop.
Like it.
If you've got great facial hair, keep it. It does not affect your play on the field. That much we know. Thank you, Washington Nationals, for that. However, I think, you know, when we're talking about the second half of the season, you talk about the inexperience of the Braves and the Phillies, that they might come a little bit down to the Nationals and the Nationals might come up to them. And then you got a little bit of a race on your hands. I don't think that, like Jay Hay just said, they're not going to blow past anybody. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Matt Adams back. Shit, I forgot about that. Matt Adams has been absent for a while. He was on the DL, right? They just got Matt Adams back. He's been back for, a week or so? Like, there's just, I feel like, yeah, you know what? Jay Hay, throw some fucking baby oil on that, and I'm your guy.
Listen, here's the other wrinkle, and I don't want to go down this. Actually, we're going to save this because there's a whole section we're going to get to. But don't count those Phillies out in that Manny Machado sweepstakes either.
Ooh,
that could be a little wrinkle. Hey, one.
God damn you, Jay Hay.
One final thing before we move on from the Phillies.
Yeah,
Sir Anthony, Dallas's boy. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have him on like every fantasy league I play in, so I'm like all over this guy. I love it. Lowest fielding independent pitching of any pitcher with 30 innings pitched this year. Here's the list. Aroldis Chapman, Edwin Diaz, Sir Anthony Dominguez.
Wow.
1.71 FIP.
Good for him.
Six walks. The guy's got six walks to 41 strikeouts in 31.
Where is Jeffress on that list?
Knight him. Jeremy Jeffress?
Yeah.
He's not in the top 30.
Damn. Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah.
Huh. All right, we can edit that part out.
He's number 48 at 2.78.
Yeah, we don't need any Brewers.
In between Ross Stripling and Taylor Rogers. Mm. Good stuff.
You know what else is good stuff? Some drama going on in St. Louis.
Fowler's howlers.
I feel like, you know, not a lot is said about the Cardinals and how it's the Cardinal way and they're always in the postseason and this and that. The Cardinals have had some drama this year. And Dexter Fowler, I don't know what I expected from Dexter Fowler. Definitely not the season that he's been having, which is he doesn't even qualify now because, you know, he hasn't been in there every day. But minimum 250 plate appearances. His 560 OPS ranks 201st out of 204. And his 173 batting average ranks 203rd out of 204. So we're talking about one of the worst offensive producers in Major League Baseball this year. So this has resulted in the Cardinals president of baseball operations. This is a guy with some power. This is a guy who, when he says something about you, doesn't exactly
People listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't have the full quote in front of me, but the gist of it was he said people were coming up to me and talking about Dexter Fowler's effort and energy on the field, and it's basically hard for me to deny that that's an issue. That's paraphrasing, but the gist of it.
Yes.
Dexter Fowler, I think, has handled this, I think, a lot better than most players in his position would have. You know, does he have 10 years in the big leagues? He has to have 10 years in the big leagues.
Very close, if not. Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is actually, I believe this is like his 10th year.
Yeah, he debuted in 2008.
John Mozeliak just dropping down the hammer on Dexter Fowler's effort and energy. This is a World Series champion that we're talking about, and a catalyst for that Cubs team, goes to their rival, and because I remember when he was in Colorado, his on-base percentage every year was like fucking 365, 380, all kinds of eye-popping on-base numbers. This is probably the most adversity that he's faced in a decade. And
there's no doubt.
Right. But for him to handle it this way and say, yeah, you know, we're moving past it, you know, he would not come out and dispute these. See, that's the thing, right? He's not knocking his on-field performance. He's knocking his effort and his energy on the field. That's why I was expecting him to at least defend himself to the point where he says, I mean, I'm trying. I'm not seeing the results, but I'm trying. And instead, he's just like, yeah, we're moving past it.
You know, I mean, well, part of this came, like, didn't he just get back from the bereavement list as well?
Yeah, he is, what do you have, a second kid or something? He missed three games.
Yeah, he just had a second child.
Yeah.
And if you pay attention to his comments in response, which are, look, I'm focused on family. I've got a family to think of and take care of. Like, I'm moving beyond this.
Yeah.
And that means, one, maybe my focus has been elsewhere because I've had a pregnant wife, and a lot goes into that. All right. As a ball player, just being a ball player doesn't mean that life outside doesn't come at you. So we have no idea what the pregnancy was like. I mean, who knows? God forbid, but maybe there were issues that were surrounding that, and he's got to worry about that. He's trying to compartmentalize shit. We have no idea. So for him to handle this the way you said, Jared, I think is a small acknowledgement that there may be some truth to the comments from Mozeliak on Fowler's behalf. And it's also him saying, you know what? I am here in a storied franchise, and I'm not trying to be anybody that they think I am being right now. That's not who I am. If you're Dexter Fowler, man, realistically, you're trying to battle with the idea that you are hitting 100 points lower than you've ever hit in your entire career, that your on-base percentage is 100 points lower than it has ever been in your entire career. Like, your slugging percentage, like all of these things, right? He's almost hitting 200 points lower, is slugging 200 points lower than his career average. So when you've got all of this going on and you're Dexter Fowler and that comment comes from the top, you don't just take it with a grain of salt. You pay attention to it. You step back, you evaluate, and you move forward. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's done. That's what 10 years in this game will get you, is an understanding of who you are and why you're still around. Dexter Fowler knows exactly who he is, and he's not worried about comments from the outside. He pays attention to them if they're coming from the top on his own ship, which he did. And he said, you know what? Maybe some truth to that. We'll see you after the All-Star. Or we'll see you right before the break, and we'll see you afterwards.
Yeah. Harrison Bader's been pretty good as his replacement, too. So that doesn't help the situation when it's like you're trying to fight your way back into the lineup, but the guy who's replaced you essentially has been pretty good. We can move on. Skip meal planning and get straight to cooking with Blue Apron. Enjoy delicious meals that are great on the grill, like honey chipotle glazed chicken with poblano. Which one is it? Poblano? Which one is it?
I thought you were fucking with me for a second.
So did I. Oh my.
Which one is it?
It's neither, you fuck. It's poblano.
Poblano.
I was honest. Every time I see the Blue Apron, I'm like, we're never going to get as good of a moment as we got before. And by God, I underestimated you.
It's Poblano?
It's not Poblano for the fucking 12th time.
What is it?
It's Poblano.
Poblano.
Poblano. Poblano. Poblano. Say it with me. Poblano.
So what I said was chicken, glazed chicken with poblano and lime rice.
And what you guys listening can't see is Jared say the word and then look at Jay Hay and look at me on camera for confirmation that he's either saying it correctly or waiting to get fucking hammered. And he's getting fucking hammered right now. Just so scared to even say the word.
I mean, I was on a good run of...
You were. Yeah. You were. It's over now, though.
It's over now. Oh, man. I thought I had that one. Mm. Add smoky depth to your dinner while enjoying the warm weather and getting those perfect grill marks. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see the power of what food can do. Blue Apron delivers fresh pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week, and customers can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what best fits their schedule. Blue Apron sends only non-GMO ingredients and meat with no added hormones. So check it out, this week's menu, and get your first 3 meals free at blueapron.com/starting. That's blueapron.com/starting to get your first 3 meals free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, the final vote at the time of us recording this on Wednesday night. It's Wednesday, right? Yeah, Wednesday night.
Yep.
Jesus Aguilar of my Milwaukee Brewers is Jesus. Leading in the National League. And Gene Segura of the Seattle Mariners is leading in the American League. Any objections, gentlemen, to these guys leading
no.
and eventually winning? No?
I have no objections. I know you've made a strong case for your boy, Benny Butt Cheeks, a.k.a. Benny Biceps, yeah. a.k.a. Mr. Hammer Curls with the Chains
oh, yeah.
in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I gotta go Mean Gene. I got to go Mean Gene. I think about the
average
season that... No, not because of batting average, Jared.
Benintendi's got the highest OPS out of all the candidates.
Sexy, I get it. I like Segura because of, look, are the Red Sox where they're at without Benintendi?
I mean, it's not the MVP award. It's.
I know it's not the MVP award, but what I'm getting at is Gene Segura has continued. This is a guy who, what, in 15 or 16, led the NL in hits, 203, yeah. 204
Very
hits.
Underrated like, player. Like,
very, and that's that right there. That word that you just used is why I want him to have the opportunity to look, Jared, I was a fucking subpar horseshit left-handed pitcher thumber motherfucker who never deserved even a conversation of being on an all-star ballot.
I would have
thank you, you and Dan Amara.
Yeah.
Had I had a decent half season, I would have loved the opportunity to showcase my 87. And my dastardly changeup. And you know, I would have loved. So what I'm getting at is just because he's out here on the West Coast and flying under the radar, for me, is not a reason to just hand it to a guy like Benintendi. And he's very deserving. You're not handing Benny anything.
Yeah, no.
But Segura is so pivotal to the Seattle Mariners that without him, they're not where they're at. And I understand that is an MVP argument, but for me, that's an argument on why he needs the recognition he deserves is because he is such a pivotal part and such a huge piece for this team.
Jay,
that's all.
I got to say, I think this AL crop is, I haven't studied it, but it feels like one of, if not the strongest final vote crops that I can recall.
Yeah, because
they're
remember,
all good.
Like the Red Sox fans would be like, oh, yeah, like, you know, like you're being a homer for tweeting about Benintendi. He's like, I feel like Benintendi legitimately deserves it. I remember it was either last year or the year before, Xander Bogaerts was in the final vote, and everyone's like, why aren't you pumping Bogaerts for the final votes? Because he doesn't fucking deserve it.
Because he wasn't.
Yeah, he wasn't the best player out of that crop. So this year,
you're the homer. You're the homer, absolutely. But like I said, dude, you made a strong case for Benintendi.
Yeah.
And anybody could make that very same case. But you're not blowing him in this case.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, I love the Red Sox, and yes, you know that I love the Red Sox. But in the final vote, the year that Bogaerts was in it, I did nothing about like the whole like vote for whatever. Like there was one year, yeah, I was just like, he just doesn't deserve it. But this year, if Gene Segura gets in, am I upset about it? No.
Yeah, I think the only guy that I feel comfortable and he's still a good candidate, but the only guy I feel comfortable crossing off on the AL list is Stanton.
Yeah.
Like, I was just going to say it.
Like, it's really hard for me to distinguish between the seasons as outfielders that Benintendi and Eddie Rosario are having. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both really good. Their triple slash lines are really similar, and both forms of wins above replacement view them very similarly. The same is actually true of Andrelton Simmons and Gene Segura. Like, they're both having batting average fueled, in part,
yes,
outstanding first halves. They're both probably playing at an offensive level that is a little bit above what we had anticipated from them. And so, like, I'm in on Segura, and then I go to Andrelton Simmons' page, and it's like, well, I have to be just as in on him.
I totally agree with you. And this is Simmons having two strong offensive years back-to-back, right? Yep. Simmons had a career year last year. He picked up right where he left off this year offensively. And I'm excited about Simmons just because of what he has been defensively throughout his young career. And you start pairing offense like we've seen over the last 2 years with that defense. Holy fuck. Andrelton Simmons becomes your granddad's favorite player right now.
Yeah, I would. I think any of those four are really strong candidates. I watch Benintendi the most, just because of my time zone and what's available to me on regular TV. Mm-hmm. But like,
sure.
You know, I think I would give the vote if absolutely pressed. I think I'd go Simmons, but I don't.
You would.
Yeah. I don't feel great about it.
Is that like strictly based on wins above replacement?
No. Literally, I looked it all up just now. They're like 0.1 away from each other in any, like all of all four of those guys.
What stats are you looking at that's like Andrelton Simmons is the guy out of that crowd?
To me, the triple slash offensive marks of Andrelton Simmons are just as impressive or very, very close to Gene Segura's. And thus, I would tend to give the edge there then to the guy who I know I can hang my hat on the fact that he's probably the best defensive shortstop in baseball. And that is as arbitrary of a distinguishing factor between those two as I can possibly come up with, because you could say Segura's better at X
it's okay though, because we're talking about being fans here.
Yeah.
And if you're going to mention the defense, guess what's on display in a baseball game
for sure.
So,
and I this doesn't factor into my decision, but I do think the chance for Andrelton Simmons to provide like a eye popping game changing highlight, in a high profile stage like that is probably a little bit higher than Segura's is. But I don't feel like the NL is anywhere near as robust.
No.
Like I
can't. Max Muncy, Jesus Aguilar, Matt Carpenter, big fan of Matty C. He's having a nice little go.
Yeah.
Brandon Belt having a career year as well. Mm-hmm. And then the speedster Trey Turner out of Washington.
But it's just not even fucking close. It's just not.
No,
The fact that Aguilar even has to be in the final vote is a joke. Like, he's leading the National League in home runs, OPS, like second in weighted runs created plus. He is an all star. And I understand that it's like, am I advocating for him to start over Freddie Freeman? No, I'm not. But he shouldn't have to be put into some fucking, you know, online vote to be an all star. He just is an all star.
Yeah, how many ABs does he have though, Carrabas? Like, he's just
qualified. But he's qualified, which makes it even more impressive that he's, you know, leading the fucking National League in home runs, and he missed the whole month of April. The only reason why he got the shot was because Eric Thames had the thumb injury.
Sure. So I guess what I'm asking is, would you be are you comfortable giving awards to guys who just barely eclipse the qualifying marks?
I mean, like, if he qualifies, he qualifies. It's not okay. like, because right. Before, when we did our last podcast and we were doing the first half award season, you know, I called him an MVP, and he, at that point, he didn't, I think he was like three
he's qualified appearances. Since, I think.
Yes, he does qualify now, but before, he missed qualifying by three plate appearances, so it sort of demeaned it a little bit when I was like, yeah, he would be leading all these categories if he qualified, but he was not qualified by about three plate appearances. So, yeah, I have no problem saying that Jesus Aguilar is an all-star and he shouldn't even have to be in the final vote for the season that he's having.
Who are you taking?
I mean, I would tend to agree with Jared. Also, Max Muncy.
But he's going anyway.
I like Muncy.
He's in the Derby.
Yeah, that's fine. But, I mean, to perform the way he has,
what's he got? 21 jacks.
Expectations,
yes.
Yeah, 21 jacks with the expectations that this team came into the season with, and your light JT to start, so he fills in over there. Bellinger starting to have some issues over at first. Obviously, they can plug Muncy in over at first base as well. So he's been a stopgap in two different spots, and has been like, who would have thought that it was Max fucking Muncy that was going to put the Los Angeles Dodgers
crazy
on his back?
I would it's down to those two for me. It's down to Aguilar and Muncy, and I will admit to having a little bit of a taste for Muncy's 45-point edge and on-base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
I actually will admit to not realizing that he had a 4-fucking-12 on-base percentage this season.
That's really? Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
wild.
Dude, that's what's Yeah, that's why people are like, trust me, I'm down here, obviously, in Dodgerland, and I've got people that I play softball with just randomly texting me, Max Ruth, Muncy
Crazy.
Did it again. This guy's unbelievable. And I'm like, these people watch three Dodger games a year, and they are all in on Max Muncy.
Did his OPS get up over 1,000 now?
Yeah, it's entering tonight, it's 1.029.
Okay, so wait, what?
It's actually ahead of Aguilar's.
So that must be a recent development then. Or does he qualify?
He may not.
That's what happens when numbers get updated.
I don't think
he's not qualified.
Yeah, I was going to say he must not.
206 ABs.
Yeah, so he's not qualified. Yeah, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Decent.
Yeah, Sid Muncy.
Overall, as long as it's not Matt Carpenter, what a lame choice that would be.
# we believe in Jesus.
Nope, no offense to Matt, personally.
Yeah.
And speaking of all-stars, Dallas Braden. We got one on the podcast here today. His name's Jed Lowry, Stanford grad, Oakland A.
Yes. We're smart.
Switch hitter, former Boston Red Sox. Without further ado.
Former Astro,
yeah. Let's kick it to our interview with Jed Lowry. All right, we are here with 2018 All-Star Jed Lowry of Dallas Braden's Oakland A's. I guess the first question has to be, how does it feel to hear All-Star associated with the name Jed Lowry for the first time in your career?
I don't think it's sunk in yet, but it sure sounds nice to me.
I mean, 11 years in the big leagues, your age 34 season. And by the way, this is not your first All-Star worthy season, in my opinion. You know, 2013, last year, those were All-Star worthy seasons. How did it feel to actually be told you are an All-Star versus feeling like you were an All-Star?
That was a pretty special moment. You know, the timing was it was a little bit of an emotional roller coaster there for a few days because, you know, got bad news to start, but the way it worked out, we were in Houston, so I was at home with my wife and kids, so that was that was actually better because I got to celebrate with them.
Yeah, I mean,
what was the first phone call you made, Jed? Because like you said, dude, you got the family, you got the kids, you got everybody right there, your unit with you when you're able to get that news. Who is the first phone call made to immediately after? And what was that like, just the emotional exchange?
It was my parents, and I got to tell my mom, and she was very excited. She had to step out of her quilting workshop to take the phone call. So they were excited and making plans to get to DC.
That's the crazy part is people don't think about the human element to this. Is you get, you know, Gleyber Torres is hurt, Jed Lowry's in, call your family, you got to get on a plane to DC, book the hotels, which I'm sure they jack up the prices for that too. You need to get the tickets, make all the arrangements. The human element to that is crazy. But who are you most looking forward to be able to call a teammate for one night in DC?
Oh, that's a let's see. I'm gonna go, with a guy that I haven't played with before in Mookie Betts. I'm a big fan of Mookie. He's in my opinion, he's as good as it gets.
That's right. Yeah, we've actually been having this debate for quite some time, Jed. And, you know, Dallas, I have to fight back against Dallas all the time by saying, yeah, Mike Trout, best player talent-wise on the face of the earth. But Mookie Betts is statistically having the best year of anybody. That's just a fact. We're dealing with facts here, Jed.
Mike Trout is the things that Mike Trout can do on a baseball field are, you know, it seems like he's playing a different game than everybody else. But, I don't know. I just watching Mookie play, I really enjoy it.
The craziest thing about Mookie, too, is that he doesn't realize how good he is. Like, he'll have his teammates and the manager will talk to him and be like, dude, you're one of the best players in the game. And he's like, really? It doesn't process in his brain. But you yourself, you have already tied your career high in home runs with 16. We're not even at the All-Star break yet. Have you made any alterations to your swing or your approach to make this happen?
I think subtle adjustments. I mean, I think over the course of your career, you continue to evolve and refine what your approach is. And I think I've been able to focus in more on what has given me success in the past, where early in my career, you know, you're kind of searching at times, and you know, you have success and you try to figure out what it was that was giving you that success. And it was just, it's not the launch angle or any of that. I'm not a big enough, strong enough guy to try to manipulate the launch angle. I do that. My mechanics break down. I'm worried about just hitting the ball hard.
Yeah, I mean, and it's obviously working. You know, you're having arguably the best season of your entire career this year. Mm-hmm. And is it as simple as you're staying healthy and getting the opportunity to play every day? How much of that is the factor here?
I think that's a big factor. I think if you look at my track record, the years I've stayed healthy, I have produced. But if you look at that off season, 2016, I had two surgeries in September. I missed the last month of the season. And the one that really changed everything was the deviated septum that I had. And that just, that allowed me to recover. 'Cause I, you know, for about 5 years there, you know, end of 2013 is when I really started to feel it. I was just completely sleep deprived, and I finally got a sleep study done in 2015 that showed that I wasn't getting quality sleep, even though I was sleeping 8-9, sometimes 10 hours at night. It was the equivalent of 2 to 3 hours of sleep. And it took me two more years to figure out what exactly was causing it, but finally got it corrected, and it's made a huge difference.
Jed, you talked about, as you've gotten older, you've learned how to tinker, you've learned how to make these adjustments. Honestly, I watch it unfold almost on a nightly basis, there at home, and I watch the adjustments you make during at bats. But you've got some young guys that you're surrounded there in the infield. You've got Olsen, you've got Chapman, but you've also got some younger guys like Piscotty and Pinder, the super utility guy. Fowler's just come over. What sort of role do you play as one of the elder statesmen? And what's it like watching these young kids roll in, especially a guy like Chapman play defense the way he does, Olsen, the kind of power he has. But what's your role like, and what has it been like to watch these young kids develop?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to unpack, but I you know, in a nutshell, I mean, these guys are supremely talented. You know, if you want to focus specifically on the two corner guys and Chapman and Olsen, I mean, these guys can do it on both sides of the ball, and they, you know, they get headlines for, you know, Chapman's defense and Olsen's power, and rightfully so. But like I said, I mean, Olsen is one of the better, you know, one of the best first basemen I've ever played with. I mean, for as big as he is, his feet are incredibly quick, and he's got really good hands over there. And Chapman's got all the potential in the world with the bat in his hand, and is just continuing to refine his approach and his swing. And, you know, I think the sky's the limit for both of those guys.
Dude, so hold on. Now you're headed to DC, and that's kind of why I'm excited. I've been one of your biggest advocates this entire season. I've been telling you that shit after we have you on the broadcast after the game, after heroic moment. What are you, Jared talked about the teammate you're most excited about becoming teammates with in Mookie. But as far as the pageantry that surrounds the All-Star game, what are you most excited about experiencing? Is it BP? Is it taking ground balls with some of the guys that you're going to be lining up with? Is it just walking out there for the anthem, staring around? Like, what are you most excited about taking in experience-wise?
Well, you know, for never being, it's all, you know, it's all just in my, you know, just my imagination right now. But I know I'm going to be really excited to take my kids down on the field for batting practice. For the home run derby.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And, sure. Yeah. They'll be down there for the home run derby. You know, I'm not sure if they'll be a more excited kid than my son. I mean, he's 21 months, and I swear every morning he wakes up, he goes straight to his tee in the house. So he's a ball player already.
You got him hitting him switch?
he's swinging lefty right now. I try to get him to put the bat in his right hand every once in a while, just to try to groove that muscle memory too. Yeah. But you know, if he's gonna pick it up, he's swinging lefty.
Yeah, you can't start him too young. So your name has been brought up in trade rumors again this year. Last year, I advocated for you to come back to the Red Sox. Didn't happen. Are you flattered that teams think that you could help them make a run at the postseason, or does it bother you that people think the A's will be sellers?
Both. I think, yes, of course. I mean, anytime your name is talked about in trade rumors, it means that there's some sort of inherent value there. Mm-hmm. And the second part of that question is, you know, we have a good team here, and it's a good young core. And, you know, hopefully we can continue to be right there. And because I'm really, really enjoying playing with these guys. It's fun to show up to the ballpark every day. And you know, like I said, hopefully we can stick around and make a push.
Yeah, you kind of answered my next question, because I was going to say, you know, what's the vibe like in that A's clubhouse right now? And, you know, is there a growing sense that you guys can make a run at the wild card spot? Is that something that you openly talk about amongst yourselves, or is this just a business-like relationship in there where everyone just goes about their business and whatever happens, happens? If you get there, you get there.
No, I mean, we talk about it. We have, we have our eye on the prize, and, you know, we have been playing extremely well lately. I think that's a product of the preparation, though. I think that, Dallas, you were asking about my role earlier, and I think the biggest thing is to, you know, instill in these guys that your preparation is what sets you up for success on the field. And so, you know, I think if I do anything well, it's that I'm well prepared every day, and you know, hopefully we continue to derive our confidence from our preparation, not just because we're playing well.
So you're a Stanford grad. So my question is, who's the second smartest guy in the A's clubhouse?
I think does Piscotty have his degree? I think he's got his degree too. So he's a Stanford guy.
Oh, is he really?
Piscotty's a double. Yeah, Piscotty's a Stanford. There's some fucking genius motherfuckers running around in that clubhouse, Robinson. That's why I like to talk to those two specifically. I talk to them on the baseball field, limited conversations, because I know I can get in, I can get out before they really start to deep dive into some intellectual shit that I'm just going to be completely hit with a tsunami. I can't.
Sam Fold a Stanford guy?
Sam Fold was also a Stanford. Yeah. Sam Fold was actually my host on my recruiting trip to Stanford.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, I just tricked them long enough, you know, they're thinking I was smart to let me in.
What's a recruiting trip to Stanford like? Like, are you banging out pie to the sixth power and then going to a poetry reading? Like, what is a recruiting trip to the Cardinal like?
Yeah, just a bunch of nerds, right? We actually had a good time. I wouldn't say that it was blue chips or you know anything to that extent, but I definitely had a good time.
Oh yeah. So I talked about it before we started the interview. You and I, we crossed paths about 10 years ago at Christmas at Fenway. I asked you about your ping pong skills. Have they improved at all? And do you think that you could beat Dallas Braden? Because he is very high on his ping pong skills.
I probably played ping pong in 10 years. I probably played ping pong a handful of times.
So they have not improved.
So my game is probably not improved.
But it was spring training, like 2008. It was like you and Pedroia were like teammates. Is either you were on Pedroia's team or you were against each other in like a spring training ping pong tournament?
Yeah. I remember that. At the old facility down there, the minor league facility.
Yeah.
Pedroia is really good. I mean that hand-eye coordination carries over to ping pong for him. But he's also a tennis player too, so he has a leg up on that one.
And he's a psychopath when it comes to being competitive.
Well, and he's low to the ground. He's low to the ground. He's low to the table. He's got a low center force. So, I mean, he kind of bounces around.
Yeah, he does. He does. So, can I beat Dallas Braden? I don't know. I mean, I assume Dallas is playing lefty. He might be putting some funky spin on it.
Yes. Yeah. I would also recommend being sober when you play him. That was my greatest disadvantage.
Yeah, I took Jared Karavas came out to San Francisco for an April the 20th series. it didn't really work out for Jared in a couple different fronts. He was walking in figure eights. He was astonished that the cement was fleckling and sparkling. It was a great time, man. It was a great time. ask him the question, Jared.
No, I have two questions, and this one is also a question that we've asked other guests too.
Okay, all right.
We usually ask this question to players who have played for this man. Give us your best Terry Francona story.
Yep.
Oh man, most of them probably aren't suitable for
that's what everybody says
public knowledge. You're putting me on the spot here. I think it's probably my debut. You know, he made a bet with me that if I drove in three runs and we won, he'd give me some a little incentive. Let's just put it that way.
And
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, boy.
And he had some unkind, kind words for me because, you know, he wasn't too happy to lose the bet, but was happy to win the game.
Love that. Why he's one of the best managers of all time, not just active. So then the last question that we asked all of our guests is, if you could go back in time to witness any moment in baseball history live in person, what would it be?
Oh, there's a lot there.
Anywhere, anytime, you're right there. You're in the stands, you're in the dugout, you're on the field watching it happen. Anything. Some say May 9, 2010, just for a starter, if you're into that.
I'm gonna have to
say two. I don't think I can narrow it down. Probably Babe Ruth's farewell. You know, he came out and gave his speech. I mean, the what he means to the game and you know, to see that final time probably would have been pretty special. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have to say Jackie Robinson's debut.
Also a good one. Like that one,
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah.
All right.
We haven't got the Babe Ruth speech one.
We have not gotten Babe Ruth calling his shot. Have not gotten
that one.
I'm also a big time Babe Ruth hater. I don't know if you know that, but big time Babe Ruth hater. Yeah.
He hates Babe Ruth. He likens Babe Ruth to Matt Stairs.
No. Adam Dunn. If Babe Ruth Adam played Dunn, today, he'd be Adam Dunn. That's my take, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's kind of a hard argument to make, but I will say, given you know, you're such a statistical guy, if you're talking about, you know, Mookie Betts, because statistically, yeah, Babe Ruth is was hands down the best player of the era
of his time. Right? Yeah, like he out-homered entire teams.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, you know, say what you want about the man off the field, the man on the field. I mean, he saved the game, and you know, you're talking about a time in baseball where, you know, a lot of interest was not, you know, it just wasn't being you know, generated by anybody else, and he was the man.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was. There's no doubt. Jed Lowry, Oakland A's, 2018 All-Star. We'll say that one more time.
Baby.
He is an All-Star. Jed, thank you so much for coming on with us today. Best of luck to you in the All-Star game where you will be going in D.C. as a baseball player.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you can't get rid of us, Jed, because we'll be seeing you in D.C. out there at the game. We'll be in the clubhouse giving you high fives, congratulating you. But once again, thanks for the time, Jed. Kick ass tonight, brother. We'll see you. We'll see you in D.C.
Perfect. Can't wait, guys.
Big thanks to Jed Lowry for coming on the podcast here today, Dallas. That was pleasurable for you, I can imagine.
Yes, it was great. I mean, I get to spend almost every day with the guy when I'm at home, chopping it up with these guys behind the cage and shit like that and in the clubhouse. But it's just great to get these guys the exposure that they deserve. You know, I mean, we can't just have Red Sox A, Red Sox A, Red Sox A on the podcast. I think people would catch on to that.
Maybe.
So
next week we got Coco Crisp.
It's great to have
week after
all
that,
of
Johnny
this,
Gomes.
You know what I'm saying? And Lenny DiNardo. That's right. Double dipping, folks. So to get Jed the spotlight that he deserves, to get him the national attention that he deserves, good on Major League Baseball, and we're just doing our little part as well.
Yeah, we should get Josh Reddick on and Brandon Moss.
Red, he's electric.
Andrew Bailey.
Boom, boom. Oh, boom, boom.
I feel like I should mention John Lester here, but I feel like no one will ever remember his days as an Oakland A.
As the Sox? Oh, yeah, no. Yeah,
just like no one will remember Yoenis Cespedes as a Red Sox.
Nobody.
Do you want to talk a little Manny Machado here? I know we touched
Manny
on
Notch.
It a little bit, but
Manny on the move, old Manny mover.
So, can I ask the first question?
Sure.
Has your guy's opinion on, like, because I know we've as a podcast been on the fence on the idea that he even gets traded at all because of how weird the fucking Orioles are?
Correct.
Do you guys think, as of July 11th record date, Do you guys think he gets traded?
1,000%, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. All right. Absolutely. So we've softened on that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there was a point where
I think our stance was just like they're buffoons if they
Yeah, for sure.
But the track record has shown that it was a very real possibility that they could fuck this up again.
Yeah. More so ownership than front office.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the front office, baseball operations, Dan Duquette, would love to move him. And that's the thing, too. So Hubs is out here fucking talking about, oh, yeah, we're going to get Manny Machado, and you know we're only going to give him some bum middle prospects. I was like, Hubs, do you understand that the Yankees are not the only team? That like, this is not free agency. It's not like you can just throw a bunch of money at Manny Machado and then he's yours. The Diamondbacks, the Brewers, there's going to be plenty of teams that have the chips to acquire Manny Machado that are going to be in on him. And it's not, right now it's July 11th when we're recording this. They don't have to fucking deal him to you right now. Like he's talking about, any day now, like within the next couple days, he's coming to the Yankees. Why, if you're the Orioles, would you not wait even longer? Teams get more desperate. They're like, all right, fuck it. Like if you're the Yankees and you get the sense that the Brewers are about to put together a package that is better than yours and you really want Machado, you might be like, all right, we'll take this extra guy. The Orioles would be smart to do that, and maybe I'm giving them too much credit for waiting it out for desperation packages, which are a thing. And then also, the Yankees, too, are probably less inclined to throw that desperation extra prospect out because they'd be like, maybe we can just use these assets on a pitcher, we'll sign them anyway.
Cash already took Sheffield, Justice Sheffield, their top prospect, right? Yeah. Or one of their top prospects, one of their top arms.
Yeah.
They already took him off the table. Like, nope, sorry, you're fucking sniffing up the wrong tree, pal, you're coming over Justice Sheffield. That ain't happening. He ain't leaving town. So you had to start paying attention to it when you start hearing the rumblings of the Bo Sox checking in, Cashman checking in. Because if one of those two makes the phone call, the other one is going to be waiting about 10 minutes, and they're going to make their phone call.
Right.
And that's kind of what has happened.
Well, an hour ago, John Heyman tweeted that the Yankees have made a, quote, strong offer for Manny Machado. So if that doesn't include Sheffield, then you're thinking Andujar plus Frazier plus, they're probably going to want an arm in there. Whatever the Orioles get for Manny Machado is not going to be what some Yankee fans think it's going to be. It's not going to, like, they basically fleeced the A's at the time for Sonny Gray. They'd be like, oh, yeah, this guy sucks. This guy's broken. This guy's coming off surgery. Whatever. Take these broken-ass prospects. And now they have it in their minds that Brian Cashman is just this wizard that's going to throw dog shit at the wall and get these high-level players. That's just not how it works. So it sounds like the Yankees are all hot and bothered for Manny Machado right now. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he goes to the Bronx. Like, there's too much time. Like, all these reports here, on July 11th, it seems like the Yankees are the most aggressive. That does not mean that they're going to come up with the best prospect package.
No, Jay Hay brought up the Phillies, and I said, God damn it, Jay Hay, because I was thinking about the Phillies as well. And you think about the struggles they've had with Kingery, right? Sure, they signed him to the 6-year deal earlier in the season, but he actually got demoted after signing that 6-year deal.
Yeah.
So they understand that that's going to be a work in progress. You have the opportunity to put Manny Machado on your squad and start shuffling some guys around and get them comfortable at their spot. Now you have a real opportunity, right? But again, are the Phillies in a position to go out and try to just get that rental in hopes that they have the opportunity to court him during this time he's there in town? I don't know about that. But I mean, the Phillies, the Brewers, there's obviously a lot of talk.
There sure is. And if you're the Orioles, you fucking wait. Why are you the fact that you held on to him for this long when you should have traded him last winter?
Why rush to make
a deal way before the deadline?
Right. And we're at that point though right now, Jared, where because they know that finish line / deadline is looming, there might be a team who says, you know what? We don't want to wait around for our competition to feel like they are now on a borderline position and we'll throw that extra prospect at them. We want to jump now. We want to jump early. So there could be teams that are of that school of thought and they're very well, in the Orioles' mind, and hopefully are teams that are willing to wait it out so that when they do come calling, they're like, look, fuck it, name your price, just give us Machado.
I'm going to say this. If the price for a rental Manny Machado is Miguel Andujar, Clint Frazier, and a TBD pitching prospect that is not just a Sheffield, peace.
That's aggressive.
I'm out. I'm keeping that stash of young players, and I'm pursuing Manny Machado in the offseason if I'd like him.
Yes, but here's the thing. The Yankees, as of this recording, are 3.5 games back. The most games back that they've been since April 26th, which is quite some time ago. Does Brian Cashman just say, fuck it, like we don't want to fall out of this thing? And the Gleyber Torres injury and the Gary Sanchez injury, we need some help now. Clearly, we're slip-sliding here. I don't know.
I would have to feel like if the Yankees are in that position, they need to identify that they need help in the rotation.
Agreed.
Before they need help in the lineup. And help in the lineup would be the fallback plan because they aren't able to secure an arm they feel can fit and they can get a deal for. That's basically it. So no Cole Hamels, no DeGrom, no Syndergaard, then maybe a Machado.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on, predictions. Where does Machado go? Dallas.
Oh, man. Where does Manny Machado go? Is Boston a realistic? Is it realistic?
No. I don't think it is. I think anything that I feel like that was more just due diligence.
I'm going to say the Phillies. Fuck it, I'll say the Phillies.
Oh, okay. Jay Hay.
Dodgers.
Dodgers.
Yep, because I do think the one wrinkle with them is they can slide him into shortstop where he wants to play.
Correct.
No issues whatsoever.
As a rental.
Yep.
And then Seager comes back next year, and then he signs with the Yankees anyway. I still think the Yankees pull the trigger. I still think the Yankees get him.
Yeah, I don't want to go Boston. I don't want to go New York. I just want to go with somebody who would be a splash.
That would be nice.
I do think it would. It'd be nice. It's far-fetched. I don't know that they're in any position as far as their prospects are concerned to be parting ways with guys who could hopefully bring this organization back to prominence. And Manny Machado being rented for a half a season doesn't really put them in that position.
Sorry, one more team that I want to throw out there that I think would be wise to get in there. I think I've heard their name before.
Hold on.
But
what division?
NL West.
The D-backs.
Yes. I think given how their roster is constructed with Goldschmidt clearly in his prime and not under contract forever, AJ Pollock clearly in his prime, Zach Greinke clearly in his prime, Patrick Corbin, I believe, a free agent after this season.
Did he pitch last night? Yeah.
If it's not this season, they only have one more year of control over him. I just feel like the core of this team is set to win right now. That would be a massive upgrade for them offensively and defensively. Well, defensively maybe, depending on where you put them. And I just feel like now is their time to seize. That's a team that I think would be cool and interesting and different.
I like it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm watching Red Sox Rangers right now as we're recording this podcast at 8 p.m. Eastern. And the thing that I will miss about Bartolo Colon once he finally retires in 20 seasons from now is how little of a fuck he gives when he gives up a home run. Like, no one gives less of a fuck than Bartolo Colon to give up a hit or a home run. He's just like, meh. That's baseball. I mean, he's played long enough to know that.
Done it a few
times. Yeah, I mean, like, he's done it a few times. Oh, man. Wait, you weren't teammates in Oakland, were you?
Yes, we were.
Oh.
Yes, we were.
Do you have any Bartolo Colon stories?
No, not really. Not any ones that I haven't already shared here.
I don't remember you sharing any.
He kept to himself. I used to talk about how Bartolo would walk around on his start day carrying a 35-pound dumbbell, and instead of like stretching your arm out or just, you know, like a little stretch across the chest or whatever, he would be snapping back, like in just snapping back this 35-pound
dumbbell.
With
a 35?
35, Jared. A 35. Just snapping it, whipping it back. Bam. Up, like holding it up in a 90 degree, like you were getting ready to do shoulder press.
Oh,
and meet
God.
At the top, like the Arnie presses. No, bro, 35-pound dumbbell just back and forth, externally rotating this thing like it was a fucking sand dumbbell, like that, a 2.5-pound sand dumbbell that Ellen is using, banging out her workouts in the morning in the living room. That is what he, like, he's treating it like a fucking rag doll.
That's insane.
So insane to see. It was, because you're watching Bartolo looking like he looks,
yeah,
walking around with a 35-pound dumbbell, just snapping that bitch back and forth for like 20 minutes.
For those who don't get into the gym ever, 35 pounds, a 35-pound dumbbell, like, thinking about doing that, just
externally, yeah, just external rotations with a 35-pound dumbbell at a 90-degree angle.
I could do like a couple normal curls with a 35-pounder.
Like, the Rocket does hammer curls with 35s. Like, the Rocket does, yeah, like 30, 35, 40, 45 with hammers.
Yeah, and Bart is just snapping your warm-up around with his shoulder.
Jesus.
Just a delt warm-up.
Whew. Yeah. Well, that's painful to think about. BetDSI.com has been in business for over 20 years, paying winners. A-plus rated on sportsbook review sites. Use your sports knowledge to make some extra cash. Easy-to-use mobile playing interface. Play, win, get paid. BetDSI offers odds on everything. Everything, including live betting and props as games are in action. BetDSI offers odds on pretty much everything else, too, including all major sports, politics, reality TV, pretty much everything. Use promo code RUN25. Get a free $25 wager just for registering. If you decide to deposit, you will get a 200% bonus match on your money. Once again, go to BetDSI.com, use the promo code RUN25, and get a free $25 wager on the house and 200% extra bonus when you deposit. That's RUN25 to get your free wager and start winning today.
You know what time it is.
Oh, you fucking know what time
Homer
it is.
Homer Minute, baby.
I feel like, yeah, we're getting, yeah, all like positive stuff recently.
Yeah. Well, it is for you and me, Jared. It is for you and me. I am going to squat squarely over the dead fucking corpse of the Cleveland Indians and Justin Havens. But feel free, either one of you, to go ahead and get this party started.
Oh, no, no, no. You're up first, dog.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay. Well, hold on. Let me.
And it begins. In.
Tell me when I'm on the clock.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
17-5 over the last 22 for the swinging A's. Let's just do a little rundown on what those series look like for the A's and the Indians. A's outscored the Tribe 16-3, outhit the Tribe 35-24. Just frankly kicked the shit out of the Cleveland Indians. Shutouts, all the good feels. All the good feels, Jay Hay. Jed and Piscotty are hitting at or near 300 during those last 22 games. Chris Bassett has made 3 strong starts for the green and gold over the stretch as well. I mean, guys, Edwin Jackson, the reemergence. Welcome to the Bay, my friend. Getting it done. We've got an entire rotation worth of arms on the DL, and these boys are still getting it done. Steven Piscotty, 4 jacks in 4 days over the last 4 games. My God, Jed Lowry hits a fucking career tying 16 home runs. We're not even at the break, boys. It's looking good for the green and gold.
Wow. That was like perfectly timed.
Wow.
There's the alarm, as you can see.
I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I've been known to dabble in perfection.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm. I see what you did there. You talking about that perfect game you threw, Major League Baseball? You talking about that?
Oh, no, I was...
Hey, Jared.
Yeah.
Ready for your fucking minute, baby?
Oh, yeah. You fucking know I am.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The Boston Red Sox are the best team in baseball with the best offense in baseball. Those are not opinions. Those are facts. Stats are facts. I don't know if you knew that. They have won 13 of their last 15 games. They are about to complete their 3rd consecutive sweep, which will be 9 consecutive victories. And as the trade deadline approaches, they're looking at getting a reliever. They're going to make a big splash, and there might be a name out there, a big name, that the Red Sox may or may not be interested in. And that name is yet to be revealed, but let's just say we got a little birdie who's telling us a little something that's getting the Saugus Rocket pretty excited. This is a name that I've talked about a lot in this particular podcast. If the Red Sox were to land this specific name, I actually told people in the office that there would be a tsunami of semen in the office if the Red Sox were to acquire this player. I warned everyone, so let's just wait and see for the trade deadline as the Red Sox coast right into it as the best team in baseball.
Wow, you guys are timing this out very well. Truly a minute. Good job.
Thanks.
All right. Hold on. Well, you sounded like you were like on one of those great car commercials, those great, come on down to Squeaky Jim's Nissan. All right. My minute begins now. I'm going to go a little off the board here. Obviously, the Indians' performance on Tuesday evening was gross in the bullpen. Yeah, Cody Allen. I saw somebody tweet. They did a video montage of Cody Allen when he came in, and he tweeted, greatest closer in Indians history, as the video was being played. Obviously, we know how that went for that guy's tweeting. Anyway, I'm going to spend the next 36 seconds talking about something I talked about on Dialed In, which is how this is a great example of why baseball nicknames are so fucking stupid. Part of the mix-up here was that Terry Francona said OP when Willis thought he meant OT, Oliver Perez, or DT, whatever, Dan Otero. I am... we need better nicknames in baseball. It just cannot be Chapsy and Justy and Frankie. And it's just so fucking dumb. Fucking dumb.
Time's up.
NBA has so much better nicknames.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like Jay Hay really shit the bed there during the Homer minute. I feel like
he was angry.
He is. And it's unfortunate because he had so much to get off his chest right there. I could see him wrestling with where he wanted to go, what he wanted to talk shit about.
Well, that's the beauty of the Homer minute, right? Really, really puts you on the hot seat.
It really does. It really does. Yeah. By the way, Corey Kluber not wanting to be called Klubot, buddy, you don't get to pick your nickname. It's a great nickname. You don't have a say in whether or not it's your nickname. It's a good one. Don't care if you don't want to be called it. People are going to keep calling you because it's a good nickname.
You're the Klubot. Yeah. Or we could go with this new one that I tried to workshop on Dialed In. Still a work in progress. A little rough around the edges. Yeah. I like Ice Klub.
Yeah.
The Ice Klub.
That's
Corey, the ice
that's
Klub.
Growing on me.
Yeah. Ice Klub.
Yeah. Ice water in his veins.
Yeah. Maybe if he delivers in October, that'll become official.
Shots fired.
All right. Twitter questions?
Let's do it.
From the grounds crew. Here we go. Which last place team, Orioles, Royals, Rangers, Padres, Reds, Marlins, currently, would you guys be most and least surprised is still a last place team 2 years from now?
I mean, that's two different questions.
Yes. Who would be your?
Yeah, I would be I
most
would be
and
most
least
surprised. Yes, I would be most surprised if the Royals are still a last place team.
Okay,
and I would be the least surprised to find the Marlins 35 out at the end of next season.
Okay,
I would be the most surprised if the Padres are still a last place team.
Okay,
one of the better farm systems in baseball. I would be the least surprised if the Reds are still a last place team because they are a last place team even with three of the best position players in baseball. So if they're not, if they can't avoid last place with Suarez and Votto and Jeanette having all-star seasons, then I don't have much hope for that organization.
I would be least surprised if the Orioles were still a last place team. Because I think their only hope over the next 2 years is if the Blue Jays do a total rebuild, and I don't think that's going to happen. The Blue Jays haven't even started their rebuild yet, and they're already ahead of where the Orioles are in the rebuild.
They're already better.
It's amazing. And I would be the team I think would be the least surprising or most surprising team if they are still last place for me is the Rangers, because I just feel like the NL West or the AL West feels like it's just always not what you think it's going to be, right? Like, in some way, like the Astros are who we thought they were, but the other teams, and even the Astros before they became the Astros, it was always a division that I looked at and I said, I think this team's going to win, and now I know it's not going to be that team, right? Like,
yeah, very true. I mean, look, my Oakland A's, come on.
Right.
9-10 over 500. Correct. Nobody saw that coming.
Didn't see that coming. Didn't see the Rangers being this bad either.
No, I didn't either, although I think the turnaround is going to be a little faster than a lot of these other rebuilds.
Fair.
Nate Olson at Nate Axel 9 asks, when evaluating the Saugus rocket on the ball field, what tools jump off the page baseball-wise? #groundscrew.
Oh man, bat
I'll
speed
go ahead
is
and take this.
Fucking
yeah. Go ahead, Dallas.
No, yeah, I'll go ahead and take this because I actually saw the Saugus Rocket on a baseball field. The Saugus Rocket is the individual who caught me during the Dave Portnoy challenge that still has not seen the light of day.
Hold on, do you have your phone on you?
I do have my phone.
Pull up your phone right now. Go to my Instagram and look at my Instagram story and tell me that that's not one of the prettiest swings you've ever seen in your life.
I want you to
evaluate my swing right here. It's
Let me. Here we go.
It's very pretty.
Here it is.
Go to the Saugus Rockets Instagram page.
I am.
Yep. And
I've got it. And okay.
You
want to
skip
like,
the first?
Where can
two?
I actually see a swing here?
Yeah, you got to skip the first two videos. Those are check out the Barstool Snapchat. By the way, that's what that's from. And then the third slide should be the Rocket swing right there.
It's not. It's you and Steve Peralt hanging out.
No. My Instagram story, not my picture. My Instagram story. This guy.
Click on his picture. Click on his logo.
Yeah.
Okay, I did.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Now some guy doing bench.
Yep. So you got to skip that. Skip the first two, and you get to that swing.
Okay, guys. Yep. Oh, there it is.
Yep,
hold
there
on.
It is. Yep.
You're fucking Mark Reynolds. That's who you are.
Oh,
there's a lot of I
see that now.
Yeah, there's a ton of Mark Reynolds in that swing.
You
there
think
is
so?
Nothing
yeah, kind of like a line
I,
drive.
I know so.
Yeah.
Yes, so, I know so. The front foot spin out on the heel. Yeah, that is Mark Reynolds to a T. There's no Manny whatsoever.
No, you gotta wait for the Home Run Derby video to come out. That's just one of. I don't even think that you have to see the ones that I hit in the second round. Bombs. Like the best part about this video, like I said, there's
who
multiple.
Who hit the farthest ball in the Derby? Who
me.
Hit the farthest one?
Me. No, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 were all me. I mean, these were bombs.
Well, let me get back to evaluating the Rocket on the field.
Yeah.
I instantly knew upon the eyeball test that this was a guy who had to be filled with intangibles. All right. I'll say that. I took one look at him and was like, yep, this has got to be a grinder. He's got to be a grit kind of guy. He's not the specimen that you might think you're going to see sauntering out in between the lines, but maybe a high baseball IQ, you know? Mm-hmm. He's probably got the baseball IQ of a backup catcher, maybe a utility infielder.
Like David Ross.
Yeah, somebody like that. So as far as tools, decent arm. He not a tremendous catch and throw guy behind the plate, but he really didn't have to put that on display because the ball never made it beyond him. He did a great job of catching it. Mm-hmm. And based on that swing on the Mark Reynolds comp, probably a lot of power in there. Maybe some swing and miss.
Oh no.
Probably a lot of pop.
Once this video comes out, I'm going to make the interns downstairs put together a highlight reel of the Rocket swing on home run balls, and I want you to tell me who the cop is. And you're going to be like, well, that's fucking Manny Ramirez.
All right, so right now we're going with Mark Reynolds, and we will see once the video produced by the interns downstairs what the revised evaluation is.
Yeah.
This is F-ball guy at XGZ Cole. Oh. This is an odd question, but I thought throw it out there, see if you guys have passionate answers.
Sure.
What is your favorite grass pattern / design in MLB?
Ooh, I'm a big fan of the overlaid plaid. I like that because I think it adds a aesthetic diversion for the hitter. You know, maybe there could be a catch a little bit of a glare off some of those blades that are shorn just slightly longer or shorter than the ones next to them. Provides a little bit of a light confusion for the hitter, any advantage I can find. So I'm a big plaid crosshatch guy.
My favorite design that I saw was when they cut the Boston Strong logo into center field at Fenway. That was there during the World Series. I actually, humble brag, after the World Series, which the Red Sox won, by the way, it was their third since 2004, went out onto the field and did snow angels in center field on that logo. So it holds a special place in my heart.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I have a much less cool answer. I just like the kind of like spray chart power alleys look.
Yeah. See, I don't like that. I don't like that because that gives the hitter a visual, you know,
oh,
when
I get
stay
it.
In between this line and this line.
For sure. All right. This is from O'Malley at New England E.
Are you guys still thinking the Braves will make it out of the NL East? I think that was the take pre-vacation.
Pre-vacation week.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I told Pecan, dialed in reference.
Oh, yeah. She tweets that every day after Grip and Rip It.
Dedicated
listener.
Thank you for listening. Pretty sure I told Pecan I wasn't sold on them yet, and they have slipped to even with the Phillies now they're behind. Still think they have what it takes to make it to October. We sort of touched on this.
I think we did kind of touch on that. I believe it's Jared and I who believe that the East will be spoken for by the Nats.
Yep.
Jared did mention, I think Jay as well, that the Braves could find their way into the postseason via one of those wild card vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to say no, but I'm probably alone in that.
Yeah. I think whether or not they end up making the postseason, I think this has to be a really, really encouraging year for the Braves, particularly on the mound.
Here's a question. Yes. What division do you guys think in the National League has the best chance to have three representatives in the postseason? The East or the West?
I think it's the West.
I think it's
going to be...
I think it's the East.
Go ahead, Jay.
I think it's the East. Because I just don't like a third team in the West right now.
The Giants?
I do not like the Giants.
Having a better year than the Nats.
I don't think that's going to hold.
I don't think it is either.
all right, final question from Tommy Carosielli at T Carosielli 8, or however you want to pronounce that. If you could add skills events to the MLB All-Star Weekend besides Home Run Derby, what would they be? So everybody pick one.
Wait, say that again?
If you could add a skill event.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, okay, so I don't know if you guys played NCAA baseball when that video game was out.
EA Sports? Fuck yeah.
I
it took the
so.
Place of MVP, right?
Yeah, 06.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they had the game where they had like ramps set up on the field and shit like that, and you would hit the balls and they would take off and point values and stuff.
Yep.
So I think adding targets out on the field would show the fans the hitter's ability to hit a ball in a certain direction at will. I think that would be cool. And I also think a throwing exercise for outfielders or for shortstops or for whatever, like fuck the shortstops. Give me the outfielders, line them up at center field, and let's see who can throw that bitch the hardest and on target to home plate, just like we do in practice, into a trash can.
Into a trash can.
Yeah, into a trash can.
Okay.
Yes.
I was going to say, what did we talk about? We had this discussion before in the office where I like the idea of like the outfielders like throwing accuracy. I don't know. Like that would have to be it for me. Like, because I remember Jackie Bradley Jr. throwing a baseball from home plate into the stands in center field. So I want to see who has like the longest throw.
Yeah, the best arm.
Yeah.
I think you would never see this because nobody's going to pop a hamstring for a fucking skills event, but I'd love to see like a the first baseline speed challenge.
Sure. Who doesn't want to see D.
Or Morgan shit all the way around, like, fuck, go for the fastest inside the park home run speed or whatever.
So they used to, when you go to a minor league ball game, you get these little competitions that they do in between innings, right? You get to race the mascot, this and that and the other. Well, you start a guy, just like they used to start a guy at second base, start a guy at home, and let's see who makes it around first, right?
Oh, you know what would be bad? That spurred this. You know what would be badass? Would be an around-the-diamond relay. Like, four people per team, like the eight fastest fucking players in MLB.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, like...
Sure.
Maybe it's not around the diamond, maybe, but you get some sort of handoff between the two, so there's, like, a team element to it. Mm-hmm. And you have, like, Gordon, Billy Hamilton, like, fucking all the fastest players in baseball.
Like the freeze.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, freeze, participate,
yeah.
Shit.
Cause all the cool shit you'd want to see, like, all right, let's get Chapman out there, the kid from St. Louis, let's get him out there, and let's see who can throw the fuck out of this thing.
Yep.
Well, that's not going to happen
because
nobody wants somebody to, blow out.
But we're not being asked by Rob Manfred to come up with practical solutions.
But
We're being asked by Tommy Carosielli to come up with whatever we want.
And the Nippon League has it right with the bunt. They bunt to targets and shit on the infield, handling the bat, I love it.
They do all kinds of crazy shit over there. There was that game show that I blogged in the off season when I was just losing my fucking mind with no baseball. I was blogging a Japanese game show where I think it was like Jason Giambi, Barry Bonds, and I forget the third guy. But it was just all crazy shit that was very, very impressive that they were good at it.
Guys, I have actual breaking news.
Uh-oh.
We have the results from the MLB final vote.
Oh.
Ooh.
They just released them moments ago.
It's got to be Aguilar and Segura.
You will be seeing Gene Segura and Jesus Aguilar at the MLB All-Star
hit machine.
Let's go.
Like
Brew Crew.
I like it.
So there you go.
Brew Crew, baby.
Right in time for the end of the podcast.
Oh yeah.
All right, final thoughts?
Let's go back to a little thing that we were doing in the off season where I was like, all right, is anyone going to sign before the next show? And we would guess.
Okay.
Will Manny Machado be traded before the next podcast?
No.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so either. I want to say yes, just because the John Heyman tweet about they made a strong offer has me thinking, yeah. Like, you know, if the pieces fit and they're like, yeah, we like that package a lot, obviously they can be enticed by another team, sure. But if they like what they see, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
As Johnny Cochran once said, if the package fits, you must do it.
That's right. But I'm still saying no.
He did. Word for word. Yeah,
it was something like that.
So we'll see you next week.
Next time.
Live.
Wow.
From D.C. All together.
That's right.
It'll the be first great. Podcast ever with the three amigos in the same room. Wow.
Looking forward to seeing you next week, DB.
Wow. See you soon, pal.
Later.